What we're going to talk about this evening is something that is relevant really for this week's Shabbos, which is Parshas Zachar, as all of us are familiar, the Shabbos before Purim, as we're going to talk about in a few minutes. But the specific question that I was asked was, there are many groups that are currently getting themselves together to volunteer for the efforts that are necessary around the refugees in Ukraine. So some of those groups are going to Moldova, and some are going to Hungary, Romania, Poland, different kinds of areas that are surrounding. And one of the members of a humanitarian group that was planning to go had asked me the following question. It's not easy to really plan exactly when you're going to get in and when you're going to get out. People are getting stuck at borders, and it's not so clear that all the plans that you have in mind are actually going to work out the way you want them to. So this person was asked to go on a humanitarian mission, and his concern was that maybe he's going to miss the opportunity to read Parshas Zachar with a minyan this coming Shabbos. And his question was, should that be a reason for him not to go? He assumes that there are going to be Sifrei Torah there. There are definitely shuls there, but he doesn't know whether or not he's going to have the opportunity to go and listen to the Kriyas HaTorah with a minyan on Parshas Zachar. And that was his specific question. So I think it's an interesting question. It's an opportunity for us to just think about Parshas Zachar and our obligation for this coming week. But I think it's a fascinating spin on it, given the reality of what's going on the ground. There is a general question whenever we observe any mitzvahs. And that question is based on a Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah Daf Chav Ches. The Gemara tells us, Shalchu Leil La'avua D'Shmuel, Kafo V'Achal Matzah. What if somebody on Leil HaSeder is sitting in their home and they are forced to eat matzah? Somebody comes along and shoves the matzah down their throat. Not because they want to, but because they are forced to. They have no option. So the Gemara says that someone who has that very uncomfortable circumstance is Yotzei the Mitzvah of Matzah. And Rava says, from here we learn, Hatokea L'Shir. If you have somebody who enjoys playing music, and he knows how to play a trumpet, and he knows how to play a shofar, and he decides that he wants to be Tokea on Rosh Hashanah, not because he wants to do the mitzvah, but because he just enjoys playing music. And it turns out that he plays a Shvarim Trua Tkia, would he be Yotzei the Mitzvah, says the Gemara? Seemingly yes, even though he has no intent at all to be Yotzei Tkia Shofar, even though he has no intent at all to be Yotzei the Mitzvah of Matzah, we assume that he would be Yotzei. However, there is another Gemara there in the same sugya where the Gemara says the following, that Rab Zeira used to go to shul on Rosh Hashanah, and he did not know how to blow the shofar, so he had somebody else blow the shofar on his behalf, like all of us do. And the Gemara says there that Rab Zeira would specifically go over to the Baal Tokeya, and he would say to him, Ichavein v'tkali, when you have the opportunity to blow the shofar, I want you to have in mind that you are being motzi me in the mitzvah of tkiyah shofar. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? You just told me you don't have to have in mind. You said that if somebody comes on Pesach night and shoves the matzah down my throat, or somebody comes on Rosh Hashanah and blows a trumpet just because they like to blow and play music, they'd be Yotzei the Mitzvah. It would seem that you don't have to have any intent at all, and you can be Yotzei the Mitzvah without Kavana. Here the Gemara says that before Tkiyah Shofar, Rab Zeira would go over to the person and specifically instruct him to have in mind that he's being Yotzei the Mitzvah on behalf of others. So that's the question that the Gemara asks. So there's a major dispute in the Rishonim. How do you deal with this? Some Rishonim say, it's a machlokas in the Gemara. Do you need to have kavana when you do a mitzvah? Or do we assume not? Rab Zeira was of the opinion that every time I do a mitzvah, I need to have kavana. And therefore he would say, if somebody shoved the matzah down my throat, I would not be Yotzei the Mitzvah. If I would hear the shofar from somebody who's just playing music, it would not be a fulfillment of the mitzvah. The other opinion in the Gemara is that you do not have to have kavana. That's the way some Rishonim learn, and obviously that's the easiest answer to give. That is just a dispute. It's a machlokas. However, there are other Rishonim who say that there's a different distinction to be drawn here. The first one we're talking about where I do a mitzvah and I'm not having kavana. That's fine. But when somebody else is doing the mitzvah on my behalf and I am being yotzei with them, there needs to be some kind of relationship between the two people. So unless that person has in mind for me to be yotzei, it might work for him, but it's not going to be able to relate itself to me. So that's the only time that the Gemara says that you need to have specific intent to be motzi, somebody else, when you are doing it on their behalf. Okay, that's the discussion in the Gemara. That is the discussion in the Rishonim. And it's a very important discussion in Shulchan Aruch as well, as we will see in a minute. The problem is, where does this concept even come from? Who came up with this idea that we should assume that mitzvos might need my kavana when I'm performing them? If God told me to eat matzah on Leil HaSeder, so eat matzah on Leil HaSeder. Who cares what I'm thinking? What does it matter what I'm thinking? If God said that I have to shake a lulav on Sukkos, what does it matter what my kavana is? Shouldn't matter at all. So that's a major question. So the Lavush, one of the Gedolim in Poland in the 1500s, lived at the same time as the Beis Yosef and the Ramah. So the Lavush writes that we are of the opinion that mitzvos, when they are being performed, need to be done with specific intent, with kavana. And he says that this is something that is learned from Psukim. Really, it's something that's learned from Psukim. So this, again, is being written in the 1500s. Along comes the Prima Gadim, 200 years later, 1700s. And he's looking through the Lavush and he says, when I do a mitzvah, I need to have kavana, is learned from Psukim? I challenge you. Find me a pasuk where it says that. Where does it say such a thing? How do we have such an idea? Where does that concept come from? He says, maybe the Chachamim said it would be a good idea for you to have in mind while you're doing a mitzvah, but how can it be that you're telling me it comes from a pasuk that really doesn't make any sense? And in his opinion, he feels that that is a mistake, that that is not correct at all. One would not be able to claim that that is learned from a pasuk. The B'nai Yisaschar, who is generally known for his Chassidish Avertlach in the Sefer B'nai Yisaschar, also has a very important halacha sefer called Derech Pikudecha, where he talks about some of the mitzvos, just like the Rambam has a Sefer HaMitzvah, so the B'nai Yisaschar wrote a commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvah. So the B'nai Yisaschar writes, L'dati, yesh kama psukim b'Torah. He says, I don't understand what is the Prima Gadim's problem. Of course there are psukim in Chumash where we know from there that you have to have in mind when observing a mitzvah. How can I point to a pasuk? Writes the B'nai Yisaschar. As we see in Parshas Kisevo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Hayom hazeh Hashem Elokecha mitzavcha la'asos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs us to observe the mitzvos, Vishamarta va'asisa osam, b'chal levavcha u'v'chal nafshecha. Says the B'nai Yisaschar. What does that mean? I have to observe the mitzvos and be scrupulous and make sure I do everything I'm supposed to do, b'chal levavcha u'v'chal nafshecha, with all my heart and all my soul. What does that mean? I should shake the lulav with all my heart and soul? I should put on tefillin with all my heart and soul. I just have to put on the tefillin. I have to shake the lulav. I have to blow the shofar. Says the B'nai Yisaschar, no, what it means is, b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha. You have to put your whole heart and soul into it. You have to be mindful of the mitzvah that you are doing. And if you don't have in mind, if you don't have kavana, then that would be a problem because we assume mitzvah trichas kavana. Is actually an interesting discussion in the B'nai Yisaschar there as well. What would happen in the opposite direction? We know that the Torah is split in two parts, in two categories. Some are mitzvot aseh, like we said, shaking lulav, blowing the shofar, eating matzah, all of those cases. And you also have, on the opposite end, you have a lo aseh. So, if I'm careful to make sure not to violate a lo aseh, I get schar for that, right? If I have an urge to talk Lashon Hara and I decide not to, so I get reward for holding myself back. Right? So B'nai Yisaschar, what happens if I have a big urge to talk Lashon Hara, and then a brick falls out of the wall, and I get distracted, and something happens? I didn't stop talking Lashon Hara just because I'm such a great tzaddik, because I held myself back, but rather because I got distracted by something else. There was a wind outside, I see a light bulb went out, something, so I just, my mind is on different things. Would I get credit for not violating a lo aseh if really I had no intent at all not to violate it, but it's just that circumstantially, that's the way I am. Just an interesting discussion. And he quotes from the Arizal, something that I never heard of, but the B'nai Yisaschar quotes from the Arizal, that whenever we go to get a haircut, whenever a man goes to take a haircut, he should have in mind, as the barber is giving him the haircut, that I am not having Pe'as HaRosh cut off. Because if I'm just sitting at the barbershop, and he's cutting whatever he's cutting or not cutting whatever he's not, I don't get any schar for that. But if I have in mind, as he's doing the haircut, that I want to observe the lo aseh of not cutting the pa'as harosh, writes the Arizal, then you get credit. An interesting chiddush. It's an interesting idea. Anyway, I just thought that was worthy of mentioning as we're discussing this. Something I actually never thought of at the barbershop, but now it gives you something to do while you're there. So, just something to consider. Anyway, we mentioned that it was a machlokas in the Gemara whether you have to have kavana when observing a mitzvah, or you assume that as long as the mitzvah is being done, that is sufficient and there's no requirement for kavana at all. How do we paskin? What is the halacha lemaisa? Again, as we mentioned, this is a major machlokas in the Rishonim. Not clear whether or not you need to have intent every time you observe a mitzvah, or is it only when somebody else is being motzi me, like by tkia shofar, that person has to have me in mind because we need to build and develop a relationship between the two parties. How does the Shulchan Aruch paskin? It's in Simen Samach in Hilchas Tefila. Shulchan Aruch writes, surprisingly, Yesh omrim, some say, she'ein mitzvah srichas kavana. V'yesh omrim, and some say, she'tzrichas kavana. So, I'm more confused than before I started. The Shulchan Aruch says, some say this and some say that. V'chein halacha. So what's v'chein halacha? The halacha is like A or B. So that's a big, big discussion in the Achronim. Exactly what does he mean when he says v'chein halacha? Does he mean that is what you have to do, it's what you should do, it's what you're supposed to do, maybe the chatchila? Anyway, big discussion, but be it as it may, we paskin like the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham quotes a compromise opinion from the Radvaz, which is that when it comes to a mitzvah de'araisa, we assume that a person should have kavana to observe the mitzvah. When it comes to a mitzvah midirabanan, since it's on a lower level, you don't have to have kavana. And even if I didn't have in mind, it's good enough. So say, for example, it comes Leil Chanukah, and I go and I light my Chanukah candles, and I make the bracha, but I'm not paying attention at all, I don't know what exactly I'm doing, I would have the fulfillment of the mitzvah derabanan. But comes the mitzvah of Tkiyas Shofar, which is de'araisa, and you don't have kavana, so then you wouldn't be able to be in fulfillment of that mitzvah, which is why we make an announcement every year before Tkiyas Shofar. Number one, we say, please don't talk from now, from the time of the beginning of the bracha, until after Musaf. We make a second announcement, which is, everyone should have in mind to be Yotzei with the Baal Tokeya. And the third announcement is, everyone should have in mind that you're being Yotzei the mitzvah of Tkiyas Shofar. Because that is what it means, mitzvos tzrichos kavana. There's a story that is told, I think somebody came to Rav Soloveitchik told a story that somebody came to his father or his grandfather and he asked him, he was the Baal Tokeya in the town in Europe, and he asked him, what should my kavanas be? And he meant, should I think about the Shem Hashem? Should I think about this and all these divrei kabbalah? And he said, your kavana should be that you're in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Tkiyas Shofar. That's the most important thing to have in mind. Everything else is icing on the cake. But the most important thing you have to have in mind is that you're observing the mitzvah, because that's what we assume. When it comes to a mitzvah d'araisa, we're all supposed to have in mind specifically to observe that mitzvah. And Parsha Zachar is no different. When it comes to Parsha Zachar, we also make an announcement in many shuls that everyone should have in mind to be Yotzei with the Chazan, and everyone should have in mind that they really want to observe the mitzvah of Timcha Zecher Amalek Lo Tishkach, which is a mitzvah that we have the opportunity to observe this week. So some suggest that if I miss out on the opportunity to be here this Shabbos in Parshas Zachar, so some suggest that maybe I should be able to have in mind when we read Parshas Kisetze, which is when we have the selection of Amalek mentioned again in the Torah, so when I get along to Parshas Kisetze, I should have in mind then that I want to be Yotzei Dechiyuv of Timcha Zechar Amalek. Okay, so does Parshas Zachar... Some say you could be Yotze with the Kriyas HaTorah on Purim. Yeah, some say that. So we'll get to that in a minute. Do we require a minyan for the reading of Parsha Zachar? That is a very important question. So that comes from a Gemara Maseches Brachos. Just to understand and appreciate the Gemara a little bit, we have an institution that is very foreign to us. We don't have servants, we don't have slaves, Bizman Hazeh. We don't have that institution any longer. And in the times of the Psukim, in the times of Chumash, in the times of the Gemara, certainly they did have Avadim. That's what everybody had. So the Gemara in Maseches Gittin is talking about somebody who has what we refer to as an Eved Kanani. What does an Eved Kanani mean? Doesn't mean he's from Canaan. Eved Kanani means he's from one of the nations of the world that is not from the Jewish nation. So I hire him to be my servant, to be my slave. So the Gemara tells us in great detail that basically what has to happen is you let him live in your house for 12 months, he does all kinds of work. You decide if you like him, he decides if he likes you. If he likes you and he wants to stay, so the Gemara says in Maseches Yevamos, he has to take upon himself after 12 months that he's going to become a full-fledged Jew. And he has to have a bris milah, he has to go into the mikveh, he has to accept upon himself the mitzvah HaTorah that he's going to observe. And if he's not prepared to do that, the Gemara says you need to get rid of him. You need to sell him to someone else, because you cannot have an Ovid Avodah Zarah living in your house. That's going to be a horrible influence on your family and your children. So the Gemara says that you're allowed to have him for 12 months to get him acclimated, to see if he's prepared to do this. Once he says that he is, then we give him a bris milah, we put him into the mikveh, he accepts upon himself all the mitzvahs, and then he's referred to as an Eved Kanani, and he has almost all of the obligation to observe all the regular mitzvahs. However, there is a pasuk in Chumash where we are told, La'olam bahem ta'avodu. Once he becomes an Eved Kanani, and I take upon myself that I'm going to keep him in my house as a slave, I'm never allowed to free him. It's an Isur D'Araisa to free him. Even if he accumulates enough money and he's now able to go free and have his own life, the Tosek says, you're not allowed to free an Eved Kanani. Okay? That's the rule. So says the Gemara the following story. Maisa b'Rebbe Lezer. Rebbe Lezer had an Eved Kanani. His name was Tevi Tevi was a famous personality. In Chazal, you see a number of Mishnayos quote stories about Tevi. So Rabbi Lezer was the servant. I'm sorry, Tevi was the servant of Rabbi Lezer. V'ishlimo la'asara. And the Gemara says that he was meshachar him. He freed him from being an Eved. And then he was able to count toward the minyan. So what do you mean? Ask the Gemara, how was he able to have him count as a minyan? What right did he have? You're not allowed to free a slave. That's a pasuk in Chumash. You don't have to have a minyan. So the Gemara says the answer is asi esei derabim v'dachi esei deyachid. Rabbi Lezer privately has a prohibition to free a slave. However, together with the rest of the 9 people who are here, we need a 10th man for the minyan. The only way we can count this eved to a minyan is if we free him and he becomes a free man like everybody else. So Rabbi Lezer said, it's worth it for me. I'm willing to overlook an iser that is only relevant to me of la'olam mahem ta'avodu, of keeping your slave, for the betterment of the entire group who needs the 10th man for the minyan. That's what the Gemara says. And the Rush there writes, which mitzvah are we talking about? Normally we say, you're allowed to violate X in order to fulfill Y, but that's only if both of them are on the same level. Davening with a minyan is only midirabanan. So what mitzvah was he doing here? So the Rush writes, no, maybe they needed to hear Parsha Zachar. And since they needed to hear Parsha Zachar, you need a minyan. So writes the Rush, we only had 9 men in town, so we had no other choice but to be Meshachar the Eved, but to free the slave in order to count him as the 10th man. Rabbi Lezer made a calculation. Is it worth it for me to violate the Aveira of La'olam Ham Tavodu in order that we should all be able to have a minion and read Parsha Zachar with a minion? That is what the Rush writes in explaining the story of the Gemara. Comes along the Chumash Hadeshin and he says, hey, it seems to me that Parsha Zachar with a minion must be Midaraisa. Otherwise, what other justification do you have to free a slave, which is an Isidar Isa, in order to hear Parsha Zachar together with a minion? And based on that, the Chumash Hadeshin has the following case. It's something that is foreign to us because we don't, in our community, come up with these kinds of scenarios all too often. But let's say you have a person who lives out in the Shtachim somewhere. He lives out in a forest. He lives in a farm. And he's very happy living out there. So he never has a minion. He's doing some kind of work out there, he has to be there. But he has a choice. He's able to travel into the metropolis, into the city, for one day. So either he's able to travel in for Shabbos, and he'll be able to hear Parsha Zachar, or he'll be able to come in next week and be able to hear the Megillah on Purim. So which one should he choose? What? He has the Sefer Torah out by himself. So he can lane. Right? So he can lane Parsha Zachar on his own. So writes the Chumash Hadeshin, what should he do? Should he travel in to hear the Mikra Megillah, Persumei Nisa, he'll be able to be together with the whole community, very nice, a wonderful thing. Or is it better that he goes, the one time that he has off from work, the one time that he can travel in, he should come in to hear Parsha Zachar together with the minyan. Writes the Chumash Hadeshin, if hearing Parsha Zachar with the minyan is Daraisa, then obviously he should come for Parsha Zachar. Even though it means he's going to forego the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah together with the whole crowd. So this is a very important psak of the Chumash Hadeshin, which is actually quoted in Shulchan Aruch, Siman Tuf Reish Pei Zayin, Hilchas Purim, where he says, if you don't have the opportunity to come for both, and you have to make a choice, it would be better to come for Parsha Zachar and lane that together with the minyan, than to be able to come on Purim and lane the Megillah together with the minyan. That is a very fascinating chiddush. So, where does this come from? Where does this idea come from? It's a very interesting question. And the Shaar HaTzion writes, in his Shaar HaTzion is the Mishneh Berurah, he says, I don't know where the Rush got this from. Who told him that it's a mitzvah midaraisa to lane Parsha Zachar with a minyan? Who said that that's true? You look through the Psukim and Chumash, and nowhere does it say that. So some explain, maybe the answer is, that the reason why you need a minyan for Parsha Zachar is because, who has an obligation to wipe out Amalek? Do we assume, first of all, we don't really know who Amalek is today anyway. But let's say you were to find out, this was a famous story that they asked Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Let's say you were to find out that your neighbor is Amalek. Happens to be a lovely neighbor, you were friendly with him your whole life, you were living very nicely together, and now you find out, you get his genealogy, and you find out that he's a member of the Amalek family. So you have an obligation to go kill him? Who has this obligation? So many assume this is an obligation on the tzibur. This is not an individual obligation. It's not that I have to go hunt down every single member of Amalek and figure out who they are and go kill them. No. When the Jewish nation has their own army, when they have their own country, when they have a melech, so the job of that melech is to send the army out to go kill Amalek. It's a mitzvah that's mutal on the tzibur. Based on that, some achronim say that's what the Rush means. Why is it that the tzibur has the obligation as a minion to lay in Parsha Zachar? Because really the obligation to wipe out Amalek, which is all that we're describing, is something that is not an individual obligation. It's something that is shared by an entire tzibur. So therefore, when we recollect that obligation, we should do it in the way that we would otherwise observe the mitzvah itself. That's what some suggest, and that's what it's all about. Anyway, but that is really what this is about. And based on that, this is a fascinating idea. Number one, writes the Mishneh Berurah, even if I have a Sefer Torah in my house and it's much more convenient for me to daven at home, writes the Mishneh Berurah, you should go to shul, because some say that this might actually be an obligation midaraisa to hear the Kriyas HaTorah on Parshas Zachar with a minyan, not to just take out your own Sefer Torah and do it by yourself. So that is the Chumrah of the Mishneh Berurah based on all that we discussed. There is an interesting comment in the Tshuvas Vahanagas, which is the Tshuva Sefer of Rav Moshe Shtermach, where he says, when he was living in South Africa, he used to be a rabbi in South Africa before he moved to Yerushalayim. So Rav Moshe Shtermach writes that in South Africa, there were many shuls where people didn't come to shul Shabbos morning. I don't know if it was because they went to work or because they were too busy or it was too dangerous outside. I don't know exactly what the conditions were, but he says, for whatever reason, many members of the community did not come to shul on Shabbos morning, and they only had a minyan Friday night, a huge minyan. So he said that they had a psak from Reb Chaim Ozer, which was the great gadol in Europe before the war, that Reb Chaim Ozer said, you should lay in Parsha Zachar at night, Friday night, instead of laying it Shabbos morning. Because really, he says, some Rishonim say, you have to have Parsha Zachar together with a minyan. If you're not sure that you're going to have a minyan Shabbos day, you may as well lay in it Friday night, which is a very tremendous chiddush, an interesting one, but a very important one. As we mentioned, what if someone does not have the opportunity to hear Parsha Zachar? Because they couldn't make it to shul, you're on a hatzalah call, whatever it happens to be, you're a doctor, you're not able to make it. So in a situation like that, the Magen Avraham writes, maybe when we have the Kriyas HaTorah on Purim, and we read the Parsha Vayavo Amalek, maybe that would be able to be sufficient. The Mishneh Berurah says, not so clear, because, after all, it doesn't have the whole story there. It doesn't say Lo Tishkach there. That's a different passage in Chumash. So Mishneh Berurah says he's not so happy about it. Maybe it's not the right thing to do. Anyway, be it as it may, you should try to be here on Shabbos. Try to make an opportunity for yourself to come when we're going to be able to all hear Parsha Zachar together with a minyan, together with a tzibur. That is really the way it's supposed to be done. There's a major discussion whether or not women share in this obligation. I should have said that women would not be mechuyavos because maybe it's a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. It's something that we only do at a particular time of year. But the truth is, it's not really the case. Let's say for whatever reason the shuls would be closed on Parsha Zachar. We would all come together on Sunday morning or Monday and we would lay in Parsha Zachar. It's not specific to a date. Tkiyas shofar has to be done on a specific day. Mikra Megillah has to be done on a specific day. Parsha Zachar does not. It just says Lo Tishkach. And from there we learn Lo Tishkach means usually we forget things after 12 months. So therefore we assume that based on that we lay in Parsha Zachar once a year in order that we shouldn't violate the Isser of Lo Tishkach. Others say the reason why women are obligated to do this is not because this is not a time-bound mitzvah and it can be done any time of the year, but rather because we have a concept. Women are obligated in the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, and they're obligated in Hadlakas Neiros Chanukah, and they're obligated to fulfill the mitzvah of Dalet Kosas. But all of those are specific to a date. So why should a woman have an obligation to drink four cups of wine? Why should a woman have an obligation to hear the Megillah, both at night and during the day? The answer is because Af Hein Hayiba Osa Hanes, the women were included in the great miracle. Lahashmin Laharogu La'abeid Eskol HaYehudim. All of us were in that very terrible decree, and all of us were saved equally. So therefore, women have to commemorate the miracle just like men do. That is why women have to lay in the Megillah just like a man does. That is why women have to light Neiros Chanukah just like men do as well. And that is why we assume here that perhaps Timcha Zecher Amalek is an obligation, some say, that rests upon women as well, because after all, women were part of that threat. When Amalek came to threat the Jewish people and to try to destroy them, the women's lives were just as much in peril as the men's, and therefore they have to commemorate that by reading this story. When do we have an obligation to do this? So as we said, we're supposed to do it once every 12 months. Where does that come from? So the Gemara has a passage, Ein Hameis Mishtakeach Min Alev Ad Acher Yud Beis Chodesh. We assume that you forget about somebody who passed away after 12 months, which, by the way, Rabbi Kiva Eger writes in Shulchan Aruch, that is where the minhag comes from. Some have the minhag to put up the matzeva right before the 12 months. Some have the minhag to put up the matzeva right after the 12 months. Why? So Rabbi Kiva Eger says, the point of the matzeva is that we shouldn't forget. So should you put up the matzeva right before we forget. While we still remember the niftar, we should put up the matzeva to make sure that we keep our memory fresh. Or do we put up the matzeva symbolically after the 12 months are over, and now we're already starting to forget, so we say, oh, we don't want to be in this forgetful mood, we're going to put up a matzeva to make sure that all of us remember well the person who has passed on. So that's really where the idea comes from, and based on that we assume that we do this mitzvah of lo tishkach. We don't want to forget it, so we do this mitzvah every 12 months. The problem is when you have a shana mu'uberes, like this year, the last time that we leined Parsha Zachar was really 13 months ago. So some say in the name of the Chasam Sofer himself writes like this, that maybe we should go out of our way that when we have a year like this, we should try to have in mind when we read Parshas Ki Tseitzeh halfway through the year, that we should have in mind that that's going to be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kriyas Parsha Zachar. That's what some say. The Vilna Gaon was very opposed to that, and he said that this is something that you don't find mentioned in any of the earlier sources before the 1800s, and why should we make up things, Shaloshiarum Avosenu, that our forefathers never even dreamt of. So why would we come and look for new chumras, keep things the way they are, we have enough things to do in our observance of mitzvahs, and therefore we should stick to that. One last question that I want everyone to think about is, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has a few tshuvas, one at least, about this, and many others, and Menchas Yitzchak and Rabbi Avadi Yosef, all have a question about whether or not I have to be careful. Somebody actually called me this week that he's in Eretz Yisrael, and he was planning to go to Chashmonaim for Shabbos. He's a yeshiva bacher who's in in Yerushalayim, and usually he says in his yeshiva they lain havara Ashkenazit. They lain like Ashkenazim. But he said he's going to Chashmonaim for Shabbos, and all of them are Israelis. I mean, he's assuming that in the shul they're going to lain havara Sfaradit, and he wanted to know, is that a problem for Parsha Zachar? So you're rolling your eyes and saying that's ridiculous. We never worry about this any Shabbos when we have somebody who's the Baal Kore. We listen to the Baal Kore, and of course that's okay. And whenever we have someone daven for the Amud, who's going to be motzi all of us in davening, and is going to say Chazaras HaShatz, nobody's concerned. But there are many contemporary Sfarim that say that maybe when it comes to Parsha Zachar, since potentially it's a mitzvah midaraisa that we need to fulfill, so maybe we should do our best to do it in the nusach that we believe is correct. If you believe Havara Sfaradit is the right way to go all year long, then certainly that's the way you should do Parsha Zachar. But if you believe that Ashkenazit is the right way, the way that many of us speak, so then how come you assume that you're fulfilling your obligation of Parsha Zachar this way? Then you should also be davening that way. You should be doing everything else that way. So it's just an interesting question to consider, an interesting thought. Of course, you're going to be Yotzi either way. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes, of course, if you go there, you're Yotzi Yechiv anyway. But it's just an interesting possibility to consider, something that I didn't think of until this person actually called and asked the question this week. Okay, wishing everyone a wonderful day, wonderful evening, and we hope to see you on Shabbos.